you know, all of this really drives towards the creation of a digital twin of the city.
Hello, and welcome to this new edition of Commotion's Fast Forward podcast, where we speak to the innovators, both public and private, who are changing the face of mobility. I'm John Brissant, CEO of Commotion. And today, we're zooming in on one of the most exciting and dynamic spaces in mobility. And it's the way artificial intelligence, and specifically machine learning, are set to transform how vehicles and humans interact in cities, regions, in the skies, on the seas, on highways, etc. Now, AI and machine learning are, in fact, at the absolute core of the mobility revolution, except that you don't physically see it as much as you do, say, the new kinds of vehicles, planes, e-scooters of every description. But it is embedded in everything that moves, and more so as the days go by. Leveraging artificial intelligence, machine learning, and computer vision in transportation helps reduce traffic congestion and accidents. It lessens carbon emissions. And for mobility operators everywhere, it can help boost efficiency, and that means profits. Autonomous mobility, of course, is the most kind of obvious application, direct application of artificial intelligence, and billions of dollars have flowed into Waymo, to Cruise, Argo AI, Zoox, Too Simple, and many, many other companies. But the way most of us actually experience AI today is through traffic management. And artificial intelligence is increasingly key, not only to reducing congestion, though you might not know it here in Los Angeles, to increasing safety. And a whole generation of companies is working on smart intersections where, for example, where gigabytes of data are crunched either on site or in the cloud. Traffic lights, the way traffic lights operate, is now very much influenced by AI. Now, one of the companies at the very cutting edge of AI and traffic management is Hayden AI. It's a highly innovative early stage company out of Oakland, California, whose mission is to use AI and machine learning to increase safety, efficiency, and sustainability in urban traffic flows. I'm really, really delighted to have Charlie Torito, Hayden's Chief Growth Officer, here with us today to talk about how Hayden is navigating in this space. Welcome, Charlie. How are you?
Great, John. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you, and we love Hayden AI. You guys have been great partners of Commotion in the last few years. Now, Hayden AI recently has been on a tear. You guys completed a successful Series A round about exactly a year ago, and just recently cut a deal with New York's massive MTA, the Metropolitan Transit Agency, so that New York City buses will be using or deploying Hayden's automated bus lane enforcement cameras. Now, why don't we start with that and tell us a bit how that works and, you know, where else it might be deployed, et cetera, because some of it gets pretty technical quickly. So walk us through the MTA deal and what you guys can bring to the table.
No problem. Thank you. And thanks for that generous introduction and your kind words. We really appreciate that. I think that everyone in Hayden is excited about where we're going. We're excited to be part of the transportation ecosystem, and we look forward to doing everything we can to enhance mobility and safety moving forward for our communities and local governments. New York is really an important moment for Hayden AI. New York gave Hayden AI an opportunity to compete for the business of providing cameras on buses to help monitor their bus lanes. It's no secret that New York has some of the slowest bus lanes in America. And the city, as well as the Metropolitan Transit Authority, has made a commitment to the citizens of New York to help speed up those bus lanes, knowing that the time of the route, the speed of the bus and the reliability of the stops are essential to getting people to use public transportation. And in New York, obviously, the more individuals who they can get to use public transportation, the better the city will move. If anybody's been there recently, I think pre-pandemic traffic levels have probably returned. An hour Uber from Brooklyn to Manhattan is not unusual anymore. That's the norm.
And I was just there a couple of days ago, and you speak the truth, sir.
Yeah, so you know, the city is really looking at ways to convince the riders and users of public transportation to utilize not only the subways, but the buses. And they are an important part of the transportation network in New York as well. I think that the MTA president or CEO says it best when he says, buses are the engines of equity in New York City. They are the mode of transportation that allows people from some of the outer regions of some of the boroughs to get to those major public subway networks or to their job every day. And so it's very important for them to enhance that bus lane network. We've developed a camera that can mount on the inside of a bus, mounts inside the windshield, and can help detect violations of bus lanes that impede the progress of those buses. The city has about 150 miles of bus lane. They've made a commitment to double that over the next few years. And so as they add new bus lanes, they recognize that there needs to be some level of enforcement of those bus lanes, or those bus lanes will just become parking lanes and riding lanes for everyday drivers. And so our technology mounts, as I said, inside the bus. It captures the license plate and a short video of a vehicle that's either parked or riding in that bus lane. And it shares that vehicle with the with the New York Department of Transportation, who then reviews that event and decides whether or not to issue a violation for someone breaking that law.
It sounds like it's all completely automated up to the point, perhaps, where the New York Department of Transportation reviews the videos. Is that automated, or is that sort of human activity there?
Yeah, that you're absolutely right. That part of the process does involve a review by a human just to validate that the event is indeed a violation, that the license plate matches what the plate that was captured was, and to do a final review before a violation is issued. But the rest of the process, from the moment the camera is installed until the moment that violation is transferred to the New York Department of Transportation, is almost 100% automated. And each day, the accuracy and the capture rates improve as this technology learns the roads, learns the lanes, learns the routes, and learns the parking habits and driving habits of the vehicles around the technology. In addition to capturing the license plate of a vehicle, our context camera at any one time captures 21 different objects. And all of those objects are used in concert with other elements of the technology to allow our cameras to not only know if a violation occurred, but to be able to identify objects within a 10 centimeter accuracy of either where the event occurred or where the or where the object is. Now, that's something that hasn't been possible with previous types of cameras. It's not something that's possible with GPS alone. We use a very unique patented technology that allows us to identify objects and identify these events with an accuracy and with a precision localization unlike any other vendor in the AI space today.
But it sounds, Charlie, it sounds like at the core of the MTA deal with the automated bus lane enforcement cameras is actually enforcement, on making sure that, for example, I, as a driver, a car owner, will be efficiently and expeditiously receiving a traffic violation if I park in a bus lane. I mean, it's not going to win you probably guys any popularity contests in the general population. So enforcement, I get, is a very big part of this, but are there sort of privacy considerations that one should be aware of? I mean, that is an issue in the United States in particular, and this has come up again and again when public agencies seek to enforce standards, even open ones. And we've had, you know, over the last few years, the sort of long-running tensions over mobility data specifications to enforce fleets of e-scooters, et cetera. Is this an issue for you guys, privacy? How do you
handle it? I think privacy is always an issue when you're dealing with local governments. Privacy is a big concern for legislators, balancing the right to have that privacy with the need to enforce certain laws or to gather certain information is a very delicate process. One way we deal with that is that our equipment is built with what we call a privacy by design format, and what that means is that the evidence that we're capturing is actually processed on the bus or at the edge, so to speak. And so all of the data that's being captured only leaves the bus in the event that there is an actual violation. And so we limit the amount of data that's being sent to the cloud utilizing this privacy by design approach. The other other tool we use is that we protect all of the data with a blockchain type of a security protocol that ensures that.
What does that mean? Sorry. What does that mean? What does that mean? A blockchain type security.
For our technology, what it means is that we're actually taking apart the data that we're sending, and then we're sending it in different packets, so to speak, that are pieces of the whole, and right. Then having another tool that allows all of those pieces to be put back together that can only be accessed by certain individuals. And so those pieces of the part are much less valuable than the actual part themselves that is needed for some type of access to some of that information. And so that's a very high level, I guess, explanation, but it certainly is a relevant analogy for how it is we protect that data from being accessed by others.
Okay, so it sounds to me like you're not probably going to be attacked by, privacy advocates, who, as say MDS has been, they say that it allows right. government agencies to know where Charlie Torito goes.
Yeah.
From point A to point B, et cetera. And that's protected information. So it sounds like it's not a concern.
I just add that at the highest level, our cameras are on buses, and there are any number of tools that citizens can use today to know where those buses are or those cameras are. And so it's a little bit different than some of the type of technology that you were just referencing.
Now, is this the first deployment of your automated bus lane enforcement cameras in New York, or have there been others? Is this something you're going to, we can see rolled out in other municipalities and areas around the country?
It is. We've done pilots in some of the larger West Coast cities. We have some international right. pilots that we're working on as well. But New York is one of the few cities in the United States to even provide or have this type of enforcement. There are several others that are that are looking at deploying programs of their own. And in fact, last year, the state of California passed a law, it's called AB 917, that allows bus lane and bus stop enforcement. People parking not only in the bus lane, but people parking in front of bus stops to be used by any of the transit agencies operating in the state of California. And so, you know, I think this is an emerging technology, and it's one that will grow significantly over time. We'll install roughly 300 pieces of equipment or systems in New York by the end of the year, with an expectation that next year the city will install as many as 1,000 more cameras. And to put that into perspective, New York has nearly 6,000 buses. It's the largest transit agency in the United States of America. So there is a significant amount of potential future growth as well, as the technology becomes more tested, as the number of bus lanes expand, and as the use cases expand as well.
Right. So let's talk about those use cases, Charlie, because, you know, it sounds that Hayden, you know, or I guess the question is, will Hayden stay focused on enforcement? Or what are the other use cases for this technology that you've been developing that can result in revenue and profits down the line?
That's a great question. You know, there's no question. It's obvious that enforcement is the first use case that will validate. It is going to be, an important part of our growth strategy moving forward. When you look at different use cases, I'd probably put them into two categories. The first category are additional enforcement use cases. These are cameras that can be used, or systems that can be used, not just for bus lane enforcement, but for, as we said, bus stop enforcement. They could be mounted on street sweepers for street sweeper, lane and parking enforcement. They can be used for curbside and delivery zone enforcement. They can be used for code enforcement. Any number of different enforcement use cases are relevant for the technology. And in fact, the next use case that we'll roll out is a partnership with a company called Conduent, who is a leader in transportation and mobility services. To provide them with a school bus stop arm application of the technology, a camera that'll be mounted on the side of a school bus that will capture, much like a bus lane camera, images and video, as well as license plates of vehicles that pass the school bus with the stop arm extended. And so there are any number of enforcement use cases that are going to be deployed in the future. But I think more importantly than enforcement use cases will be the data use cases. As I said, we're capturing right now nearly 21 different objects from our context camera at any given time. And that really opens the door for Hayden AI to use that data to help cities enhance mobility and provide insights that they previously didn't have. We can do, for example, asset management or asset tracking. Those 21 objects that the system's looking for could be street signs, and we could potentially tell a DOT the condition of the street signs or of the bus shelters or of any other furniture along the street.
In an incredibly automated and real-time way.
We could be, you know, all of this really drives towards the creation of a digital twin of the city that would allow for additional modeling to be done based on days and days of real-time mobile data that could be used to help develop that city and to recreate that city in a digital format. I mean, the applications begin to be endless when you think about some of the different tools that could be applied to that digital twin, whether it's virtual reality or whether it's overlaying other data, whether it's APIs with current providers of mobility services. It really starts to get exciting when you think about how that data could be used. And I think that's one of the problems with smart city data providers today is that there still seems to be a challenge for cities to be able to use that data and to, to have it be actionable. And so we're not just going to be creating the tools, but we're going to visualize that data. And we're going to make sure that that's ingrained in our portal, allowing the agencies that we work with, the municipal governments we work with, even the B2B customers that we work with, to leverage that data to enhance mobility for the municipality or the area where they are.
True. Of course, I completely agree with you. I think it's a very exciting space, and it's going to explode in the future. However, it's getting to be a crowded space. I mean, digital twinning, there are a lot of companies doing the data capture. But I get that, the 300 cameras, you're starting with that on New York buses, that's going to increase. I mean, you guys, you're starting out from a very interesting position. I noticed that last year you released a more consumer-focused initiative. I think it's a SafeSense app. Do you want to tell me how that works exactly, and how it's used, how serious are you guys in rolling that out, and will that be a potential revenue generator in the future?
I think one, the hope is that it will be a potential revenue generator in the future. If not, you probably wouldn't be talking to me again. But but I think the goal behind SafeSense is to add yet another way for not only Hayden AI to expand its network of data, but to also provide a tool that consumers can use as agencies become more willing to allow those types of consumers to present their own violations that they capture using technology. I think there are some programs already in New York that allows individuals to capture images of people who obstruct bus lanes and use their phones to turn in. And I think there's a bounty program for that. And so that's one application of the SafeSense app. The SafeSense app can also be used potentially for other types of parking violations or other types of code violations that a consumer sees and wants to report, and they.
So how does it work exactly, Charlie? So if I have the SafeSense app on my on my smartphone, for example, and somebody's double parked next to my car, I can't move. So instead of going to get my baseball bat, if I were in New York or in the Bronx, and smashing his windshield in, or I would just report this on the app, and presumably at some point that would be a ticket would arrive at someone's house. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I think.
Is there some gamification involved, or what's the incentive for me as a consumer to use this?
Well, the incentive is that in New York they offer a bounty for that type of violation. You'd be paid for reporting those types of violations, and so the crowdsourcing of violations has begun, there's no question that there will be value in providing tools that citizens can use to make that process easier.
But as things stand now, if I were a New Yorker in New York and I saw, your car, Charlie, blocking a bus lane, God forbid, on Fifth Avenue, and I reported on SafeSense. Is there a mechanism by which I would be compensated, or what are the incentives there? Is that the idea?
There is a mechanism. There is a mechanism that you would be compensated.
Charlie, let's go back to the Conduent, the deal that you guys at Hayden signed with Conduent about a month ago. Really, really interesting. What's the significance of that, and where are we going to see that? Where are we going to see that deployed, and how will it be deployed?
Well, it's very exciting for us. One, it is a partnership with a leading transportation mobility services provider, and so
great company.
It's just a great company for us to work with. Two, I think what's exciting about that is that it gives us an opportunity to apply the technology to another use case. And while again, enforcement will be a key element of this type of deployment, the data that will be generated will be amazingly important to school transportation directors and others who are concerned about school bus safety around the country. There's no question that it's no secret that there's been a shortage of school bus drivers. And so the number of routes has been reduced. There is tremendous pressure on different school transportation directors and school districts to maximize those routes to be able to get students there in time. There is going to be data that we're able to provide with these cameras that they don't have today that can really help modernize the way student transportation is delivered in the United States of America. So that's one.
So it's not only focused on enforcement about the driver who tries to get ahead of the school bus when it's parked, for example. I mean, this
not at all. That same camera that we're using in New York to capture people driving in bus lanes and capturing 21 objects at a time is capturing 21 objects at a time for bus lane or school bus cameras as well. And I think that then the other thing that is exciting about that is that it does allow us to apply the technology to an entirely different use case and to mount that technology now externally on a bus rather than internally on a bus, and allows us to apply some of that same location-based methodology that we use to provide even more accuracy than ever before for bus drivers. And so that's an exciting one for us. There are literally a half a million school buses in the United States of America. And while not every state has laws allowing for automated enforcement of stop arm violations, several of them do. And so we'll be ready to roll out a product to those states by the end of the year. And I expect that next year at this time, if we were to talk, we'll have already had cameras in operation for several months and we'll be rapidly growing our base of customers alongside Conduent to provide this type of enforcement.
Well, incredibly exciting. But you mentioned that school boards and school districts are cash strapped. So how cost effective is the solution? I mean, what is the cost of deployment per bus? I mean, if I'm a school, is it really expensive? Is it something that, can fit easily within a typical school district budget?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about this technology is that more often than not, it pays for itself. Almost all of these contracts with or all of these school bus stop arm programs nationwide are delivered with no upfront cost to the school district. And in fact, the revenue to the vendor is received through a share of the revenue that's collected as a result of the fines that are issued. And so that's one of the nice things about the product is that there is no upfront allocation needed by a school district or school board to install this type of technology. There will just be an agreement that includes a share of all the revenue that's collected. And that's, I think an important differentiator when it comes to automated enforcement as a whole, is that in almost all cases, there is none or very little upfront cost to launching an automated enforcement program. And that at the end of the day, I think probably 99% of all automated enforcement programs across the country pay for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And so then is there on the back end, there's a revenue split between you and Conduent, or is that, how does that work?
We have an agreement that includes, there are a number of different elements to that contract that we have with Conduent that partially includes some share of the revenue as well. But ultimately, our role in that relationship will be to develop industry leading technology for them to use their vast network to go and capture additional opportunities.
Right. Fascinating. Now, I want to get back to something we talked about, privacy concerns. One of the other issues that has moved absolutely to the center of almost any conversation about mobility and transportation today is equity. And how do we construct more equitable transportation solutions for everyone? How do we move away from transit deserts in cities? American cities notably are quite inequitable places. How much are you guys thinking about this issue as you move forward? Or do you think about it at all? I may be presuming.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And the answer is that we think about it a lot. There is one side of this argument that's people or drivers who complain about getting a violation for breaking the law. There's another side of this that has to deal with the 40 people that are on a bus, some of them who will be late to work because that individual chose to break the law. And they deserve some level of equity as well. When we look at these, while there's no question that we want to protect the privacy and protect the rights of the person who's breaking the law, we also want to provide a tool that protects the rights of the people who use public transportation. Slow and unreliable public transportation reduces access certain things for the people who need it most. Individuals who use public transportation deserve to have that same level of access to the road as everyday drivers do. And so to the extent that we can enhance equity for those riders, to the extent that we can for the disability community, make it easier for them to get on and off of a bus at a bus stop. To the extent that we can make a ride to school for a student who's riding on a public transportation bus, make it so they get there on time. Those are all things that we think about. And they're all goals of our technology and why it is that, in addition to enforcing violations, providing the data that enhances the efficiency of the system is just as important.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. It's all in the data, as we have long known. Thank you so much, Charlie, for your time this morning. We really appreciate it. It's been a fascinating look into Hayden AI, a very, very exciting company. And I'm going to hold you to this. I expect to, let's have a date in a year from now. We'd like an update on how you've been rolling out some of these initiatives. So thank you very, very much for your time. Terrific discussion.
Thank you, John. Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to coming back in a year and talking about all of the great things that we've been able to do and where we're headed next.
Yeah, and I'll see you and your colleagues at Commotion LA November 15th through 17th. It'll be fun. I'll definitely buy you a drink and we can chat some more.
Can't wait to see you there. Things will probably have changed by then for us. So,
okay. Thank you very much. And thank you to all our listeners, and speak to you very soon.
Wow, that was really interesting to learn more about Hayden AI and about how AI and machine learning are becoming real features of the transportation landscape across North America, but also around the world. The space is moving forward at warp speed. And I'm really, really excited to wait for it, to see what's coming down the pike.
If you want to meet Charlie Torito and other innovators and companies at the cutting edge of the mobility revolution, please do join us at Commotion LA on November 15th to 17th. Get your tickets now before the early bird special pricing ends next week. Also, we invite you to go to commotionla.com to explore the terrific rich program we have in store for you this year.
Another theme and subject that's becoming increasingly relevant these days is how transportation systems are being impacted by climate change. And this was recently the focus of a fascinating Commotion Live webinar, Mobility in Extreme Heat. And I'd like to welcome my colleague Morgan Kuhl in Montreal, who's Commotion's program coordinator, just to find out more about that webinar in case listeners missed it. Welcome to the podcast, Morgan. How are you?
Good, doing well. Thanks, John. So earlier this month, we had a really interesting webinar focused on mobility in extreme heat. We heard from a high-level panel of public officials from the cities of Miami. We heard from Portland. We had a speaker from Phoenix and even Athens, Greece. It was a really informative and exciting to hear them exchange ideas on what has worked and what hasn't worked in their respective cities. So, for example, we had Eleni Miravili. She's the chief heat officer of the city of Athens. And she explained how they tried to use the cooling pavement method that they're now using in Phoenix, Arizona. You may have heard about it, which is actually...
What is that? Yeah.
The cooling pavement method is they just kind of started using it in a lot of streets and neighborhoods in Phoenix. And it's actually a scaled up version of what started in LA a few years back. But it's essentially this gray paint material that they spray over the streets in order to better reflect the sun and lower the urban heat island effect. When Athens actually tested it in their city, it didn't actually work because it didn't bond properly with their streets there. And I'm sure you can imagine the streets throughout old Athens are quite different from those in Phoenix, Arizona, and LA. So I think that was a really interesting example of how cities learn from each other, but still have to face the challenge of adapting their strategies for their specific infrastructure.
Right.
I will mention, another major takeaway from the conversation was the importance of centering vulnerable populations in these heat mitigation solutions. So that's the elderly, of course, but it's also young children, pregnant women, women that are breastfeeding. That's people experiencing houselessness or poor housing conditions or living in informal settlements. It's also people in labor-intensive occupations, both outside. So think of a delivery person, your male man, male woman, but also people with manual jobs that take place inside buildings that don't have adequate cooling systems. These extreme urban heat temperatures can be really, really dangerous for these types of occupations. So, I found that this conversation highlighted a lot of urgent, really urgent implications that go along with moving throughout the city in these extreme temperatures. But it was really great to hear about the solutions that these different experts were implementing to help their citizens. So if you'd like to hear more about these solutions, if you missed this month's webinar, all the webinars can be found and accessed on commotionnews.com. We have lots of important topics being discussed, for example, next week, along with our partners and good friends at Choose Paris Region. We have an episode focusing on e-mobility with French savoir-faire. That's know-how in English. We'll talk about how Paris has adopted an aggressive program of purchasing incentives and tax benefits to really accelerate electrification, looking at broader policies to rapidly roll out charging stations, whether that's in a municipal, a business, public, or privately owned setting, and perhaps exploring whether the US can learn some things from France and possibly adapt some policies to fit the American context. I definitely recommend checking it out.
Sacré bleu, I'm going to.
By the way, if you've enjoyed this podcast, do share it on your social media platform or send it to a friend who may like it. That really helps the show. And if you have any questions or burning topics you'd love to hear discussed, write to us at fastforward@commotionglobal.com. Links to everything mentioned today are in the show notes. And I'm John Rassant, and thanks for joining Commotion's Fast Forward podcast.